Welcome inside 254. Let's close the office door and start the conversation.
You also see the ballasts and pieces of debris from the São José, which was a slave ship that left in the late 1700s from Portugal on its way to Brazil. Picked up some enslaved Africans off of the coast of Mozambique, but crashed off the coast of South Africa. We know that this was a slave ship because of the type of ballast that you'll see. Those were ballasts that were used for human cargo.
The fugitives from slavery, the government declared African Americans contraband of war, enemy property, and put them to work for the Union Army. President Lincoln witnessed this mass movement as he rode through the city of Washington each day. The actions of African Americans helped convince him to issue the Emancipation Proclamation on January 1st, 1863.
The talk around the table today is our recent visit to the Smithsonian National Museum of African American History and Culture. Colleen and I just went with a couple of our friends, and we wanted to give a little information to you, not only about our thoughts and impressions, but also specifics, why you should go and how you can go, okay? So here's a detail. It's in Washington, D.C. Admission is free. It is next to the Washington Monument on Constitution Avenue. Hours are 10 to 5:30. You can just walk up, but because they're doing advanced time tickets, it's preferable if you get an advanced timed pass. And the next time you can get one of these advance entry passes, again, they're free, is September 6th at 9 a.m. If you go to the NMAAHC website, you'll see where the timed pass link is, and you can get on there right at 9 a.m. on September 6th and get a pass for December 2017.
Right. So you have to really already be thinking ahead, and there's a reason for those timed passes. Now that we've been in the museum, it moves you through in some small spaces. So it's not a museum. If you really, really want to go, and we hope you really, really want to go after you listen to us, we would really suggest you get those passes. And you can get four at a time.
Just to let everybody know some facts, this museum was established by an act of Congress in December 2003. And you might think, wow, that was a long time ago. And it opened in September 2016 and is the only national museum devoted exclusively to the documentation of African American life, history, and culture. And their current collection has over 36,000 artifacts. And what we were talking about while we were there is we are so thankful that this museum exists, and that it opened before Donald Trump won the presidency, because we were sort of speculating, we were saying, wow, if it was still in process, if it was still in the midst of being built, we speculate that
would this be a money saving?
Right, would this be the money saving, like we're just going to stop construction. So we're really glad that that wasn't even a possibility, that it's there. From the museum's about page, there are four pillars on which the museum stands, and they are as follows. Number one, it provides an opportunity for those who are interested in African American culture to explore and revel in this history through interactive exhibitions.
Those exhibitions are very interactive. There were moments where I almost felt like there was too much going on, because there's a video showing something, and then there's sound of a different speech, and there's all these images, and it's beautifully done. I don't want to turn anybody off. It was just that I wanted to absorb everything, and there were moments that I couldn't. And revel is a great word, mm-hmm. because it is, you do revel in joyful things as well. It's not all hardship. So much of the museum is about resilience, mm-hmm. and strength. So I think I love that the verb revel is part of the mission statement.
Good on you, museum people. Good job.
Good verb.
Number two, it helps all Americans see how their stories, their histories, and their cultures are shaped and informed by global influences.
Love that. And that is, if you go with an open heart, that will happen. If you go with a chip on your shoulder, you're probably not going to go. But if you go having that desire for connection, it will absolutely happen. There's something there for everybody.
It's known as the Great Migration. They were seeking a better life, one free of poverty and Jim Crow laws, where their humanity was not denied, their economic prospects were not limited, and their lives were not endangered.
Archibald Motley painted nightlife in Bronzeville, Chicago's South Side home to hundreds of thousands of Southern migrants. At his studio in Harlem, James Van Der Zee captured middle-class life and death, retouching negatives to reveal his subjects at their most beautiful.
Number three, it explores what it means to be an American and share how American values like resiliency, optimism, and spirituality are reflected in African American history and culture.
And this is America. Mm-hmm. I felt like that museum and the Native American Museum are America, right? Like that, those are the museums I want to take my daughter to because they are the deeper and fuller story.
Yeah, it's the story that you don't get in your typical
and it is
educational
the story.
Process.
It's the story.
It is the
it's
story.
It's the story. It, is it the starts story. In the basement with the story of slavery building this country. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, I just loved seeing parents talking to their kids. And I was just like, okay, next time I come, I'm bringing Ev and we're talking about this.
Number four, it serves as a place of collaboration that reaches beyond Washington, D.C. to engage new audiences and to work with the myriad of museums and educational institutions that have explored and preserved this important history well before this museum was created.
Mm. I love that. That's the deep idea that, the museum was an organic culmination of all these stories and all these artifacts. And of course, there needed to be one central location of it, but that's not where the story ends, but really just is coming together.
And they do have an app. If you're planning to visit, you should download the NMAAHC mobile app for iPhone or Android. It's on, you know, Google mm-hmm. Play or the iOS, and it will complement your museum visit as a way to discover some of the many stories found in the collection. So the app lets you search for key objects, watch videos, review the museum map, plan your visit. So I downloaded it. It was worth it.
I was just going to say I didn't use it because I was already so deeply overwhelmed. But the second or third visit that I take to it, I could absolutely see myself diving deeper.
Also, you can follow, which I recommend, you should follow at NMAAHC on Twitter. And also their hashtag, A People's Journey. That's one of their hashtags that they use to stay updated on the latest news, events at the museum, and also to see a regular stream of stories and artifacts from the museum. They post them regularly.
Right. So the visit to the museum is just the beginning and that is the sharing of all these other things.
Yeah. I loved it.
I'm telling you, I had a sinus infection. I drove down and back the same day and I was like, I am going to this museum.
And we only got through half of it.
Glad I did. Right. And I just was like, I am not going to absorb anymore. Mm-hmm. So let's just stop and know that this was our first visit and not our last.
And shout out to the food in the cafe, Sweet Home Cafe. Mm.
Fried green tomatoes. I still think about them.
And the barbecue bison
Y'all
brisket.
Y'all had that. Yeah.
Good. And the way their cafe is set up also reminds me of the Native American Museum. You can actually experience food culture, foods that are traditionally from, you know, the African Americans living in different regions of our nation.
I love that it's an extension of the museum experience, just like at the, you know, the Native American. I just love that. I love
it's
that
so
about
smart.
The Smithsonian, that you go there mm-hmm. and that you have had this experience and you enrich it mm-hmm. in your body, as opposed to just like, oh, I'm going to have chicken fingers now, right? Mm-hmm. Like this deep food culture that's part of these groups of people. I just love that the Smithsonian has made that effort.
One, I guess, final comment about the structure itself. The way that it was designed, I did finally see something as we were leaving about the designer and how this museum, the physical structure, how it was designed, and especially the exterior. Mm-hmm. Did you catch that?
The New Orleans inspired wrought iron.
How it's a crown. Mm-hmm. The structure actually glows at night, I think. We didn't see it at night, mm-hmm. but I've seen a picture of it at night. And the structure itself that's surrounding the museum, it glows.
It's a beacon. I really felt like that museum was a beacon for every person who was walking through it.
And it's worth going. I'm looking forward to going again and seeing the part that we didn't see. And then, like you said, to go back even again and be able to maybe go and dig deeper and spend a little more time in just even one of those sections to see more, to read more, to experience more. I mean,
there's always some. I felt when I went to the museum, I felt like I had done a lot of good work to know a lot of good things. Like I knew what most of the museum was about. I knew the stories. I knew the history. I had read books about it. I'd watched movies about it. So I felt proud of the efforts that I have made against the kind of current narrative, but also how much more work I have to do and how the museum is a big part of that, a big piece of that to help me know more than I already do.
Right. And so with that, we're going to transition now into our on-site discussion that we had with our friends while we were eating lunch in place. Like we had just gone through the first portion of the museum and we were just our instant reactions in that moment. That's the next part of the table talk. So please enjoy.
I have a dream. What you have got to do is get it done. You
don't get this job. Or please
take it back. It's going
to be the salad or the food.
Free that man! Free that man!
All right, so we're sitting here. There's four of us. It's me and Colleen and our friends, Colleen and Sue. We just walked through. Sue is currently eating her lunch. So we are just going to have a nice conversation. If Sue wants to say something, Sue will contribute. So we're having a break between the first part of the museum and the next, and we're having some lunch. The food here is amazing. I just wanted to find out, we're still processing this, but what are your thoughts on this space, on this museum, on the exhibits, the way it's designed, structure? What are your thoughts? Anything that stood out to you?
I think this is, again, like yesterday, it's an experience more than what you would think of as a normal museum attendance. You're forced to move through the space in a very particular way, and you have to follow the narrative that they set forth. So it's not going to look at items or objects. It's history and the experience of a lived life through the years. So it's different.
I think what moves me so much about this museum is its deep level of humanity. And as is reflected by the contemplation room and the talk at the beginning, where the guide said something about, you know, if you want to sit and think about your families and your stories. So there's an acknowledgement of humanity and sadness that I think a lot of museums don't do. They present you with a lot of sad things, but then they don't give you a space where you can think about that. And the other thing that I liked was the repetition of the use of shackles through the museum, ending with the Black Lives Matter part, and the handcuffs were presented in the same way that shackles are presented throughout. So, and they were modeled the same way. So I hate that the story is still similar, but I also like that the museum did that.
And for me, I'm very glad that this museum is here. This reminds me a lot about the Holocaust Museum in one respect, the way that you have to start on an elevator and you move, like you said, you move through the space in a very planned way, a very purposeful way. I think that helps, you know, the idea of telling the story over time. And also for me, the move from the bottom level where you start, all the history is underground. Get it? Underground, right? So the play on the Underground Railroad, you start at the very lowest level, and it's extremely somber, dimly lit, and very serious and very sad. And then you start moving up through the levels on ramps, and it starts getting a little bit brighter. There's a little bit more representation of agency and activism, and then you move up higher, and it's even brighter and more colorful, and more light comes into the space, and it becomes almost a celebration of African-American contributions to America and the world, and it sort of moves you up while acknowledging, like you said, like the idea of the shackles. And one thing that we were all talking about as we were sitting in that contemplation room with the beautiful waterfall is how we're still kind of there with some of the issues and the problems and the rhetoric. And I'm very sad and disappointed and kind of angry that the people who truly desperately need to see this place are the people who will not come. And I hate that. I don't even know how to begin to convince people who
really should actually see this, because it is this wonderful combination of the past and the present and the weaving, to come and experience this.
Yeah, I'm sure that some people think there's a political agenda at play in this museum, but frankly, as I look around and I see all these black faces with their families, I don't give a fuck, because it's a place where they can finally come and see their history, that and the history we all share. If you're so fragile that seeing handcuffs displayed in the same way a shackle is displayed, then don't bother coming, because I don't think there's really any room for your fragility here.
Like, it's a cohesive narrative. Like, it goes back to 1400. So this is centuries that we're talking about that have not been included in your primary education history books. Like, and it wasn't ever addressed. And this is a cohesive narrative of what has happened with the development of our government, with the development of this nation. And it's not, I don't see how you can still go through an experience like this and be able to look at people as if they're separate and distinct from you. Just like in the American Native American Museum, where you had the beads with the two paths. It's like there are paths and there are distinct stories, but we come together and we affect one another, and they're completely dependent upon one another. So to deny the narrative of people that you violently brought to this country in commercial enterprise, to remove that from the history it's here now. You have to walk through it. You have to, it's embodied, and you have to move through the space, and it's amazing, and everybody should go.
So, I think a really important space to meet some of these resistors halfway is part of the education that goes along with the economy. Everything's dollars and cents, and there is a very powerful space where they discuss that, you know, there are people, much like almost talking about the Holocaust Museum, right? The guards who were in a space where they felt they had no choice. This is a part of the history. A part of the education is the finance, money, dollars and cents, as always.
And I also do want to applaud the level of intersectionality that the museum displays. The word's never used in the museum, but there's so much talk about the Ku Klux Klan rising up because of anxieties about poor whites and blacks gaining economic agency. There's a lot of talk about women and gender, their roles in the movements. So somebody clearly had that in mind when they were putting together these exhibits, because there's all this stuff about feminism. Like, there was a very clear, you can't leave this museum without thinking about, this is intersectional. This is about marginalization by class, by race, by gender. And that this museum happens to focus on a racialized identity, but that it doesn't disavow all those other identities, but actually brings them to the forefront.
Like Angela Davis and all that stuff, like when you get, oh my God, and the whole, like, was it the second or third level where it's like women were basically the reason
Yeah. And it was like that huge thing about women.
Women in the movement, and they're, women are the backbone. Like, they're the thing that kept things moving forward, that made stable environments where this activism could take place and fully recognize.
So this is an extremely powerful experience. We're going to keep eating now, and then I'm going to insert this into our table talk to give you a sense of people who aren't us as an experience. But we all experience this together. Thank you, ladies, for your input.
Like what you're hearing? Hey, Podbean listeners, see that green Become a Patron button at the top right of your screen? You can click on that, donate $1 a month, and get a cool sticker, a Facebook shout-out, and our undying gratitude. iTunes listeners, we didn't forget about you. If you go to our Facebook page, you'll see a blue Shop Now button. Click that button, and it'll get you to that same site. Thanks for keeping us sustainable.
Time for Trumpster, Trumpster Fire! Colleen, I think we need to talk about the Congressional Black Caucus.
Yes, they call themselves the conscience of the Congress.
Well, the conscience of the Congress just rejected an offer to meet with President Trump. Want to talk about why? Let me set this up. Okay, so do we all remember Omarosa? I think her last name is Manigault. She was a former contestant on The Apprentice. She is now a White House aide. Her title is Director of Public Communication in the Office of the Public Liaison. And that office is tasked with helping the White House reach out to Black communities and members of Congress on both sides of the aisle. So the invitation that she sent to the Congressional Black Caucus said, quote, as requested by the president, we would like to schedule a follow-up meeting with the entire membership of the Congressional Black Caucus to discuss issues pertinent to your members. That's what the invitation said, because he had met with the CBC in March. And then this article I found in Business Insider says that sources close to the group told Politico that the meeting would just be a photo op. That was the meeting in March. It was a photo op, really not a constructive dialogue. So what this Business Insider article is basically saying is that the CBC is concerned that Trump hasn't really done anything with the issues that they did raise with him. Basically, they're washing their hands of him, essentially, is what I sort of gathered from that. But I think, don't you have a copy of the letter
right,
that they
sent? Right, so I'm looking at their letter mm-hmm. that they sent to President Trump on June 21st, 2017. And not only do they feel like he was dismissive, they think he's being harmful. So if I give you some highlights... Their introduction is, through an objective assessment, we have seen no evidence that your administration acted on our calls for action, and we have in fact witnessed steps that will affirmatively hurt Black communities. So they're pushing the argument here for sure. While we agreed to explore possible future discussions when we first met, that's the meeting you just talked about, it has become abundantly clear that a conversation with the entire CBC would not be entirely productive given the actions taken by your administration since our first meeting. While you can solicit the engagement of individual members of our caucus, the CBC as a caucus declines your invitation to meet at this time. And the makeup of the caucus is very Democratic. There is one Republican, that is Mia Love, who comes from Utah. This is because historically, Black folk who have been elected into the Congress have been Democrats. Mm-hmm. So the list is mostly Democrats there, but again, there is one Republican on this list. They go point by point. The fiscal year 2018 budget request would not only devastate the communities we represent, but also many of the communities that supported your candidacy. Mm-hmm. 3/5 of the cuts you propose draw much needed funds from programs that serve low and moderate income people, the most vulnerable Americans among us. They take an entire paragraph to take him to task over the attorney general.
Wow.
If you will entertain me, I would like to read it.
Please do.
Moreover, your administration has taken actions that cause legitimate alarm among members of this caucus and the millions of Americans we represent. In a 2-page document, your attorney general issued guidance to federal prosecutors to accelerate the failed war on drugs that will continue to wreck the Black community and exacerbate our nation's shameful scourge of mass incarceration. Attorney General Sessions has also explicitly stated his unwillingness to utilize consent decrees to protect the civil rights of Americans and has called for an agency-wide review of these agreements. These short-sighted decisions represent willful ignorance by relying on ideology instead of data and compassion. Every dollar we spend on incarceration renders our communities less safe.
Strong language.
An entire paragraph.
Yeah, that's a lot of space to dedicate. They must really mean it.
They clearly mean that. They also take him to task for the historically Black colleges and universities that have lost critical funding through the TRIO programs.
Yeah, that got mentioned in the Business Insider
absolutely.
Article.
And that specifically targets resources to low-income and first-generation college students. And they also then say, these affirmation policies alone will devastate Black communities, not to mention your effort to dismantle our nation's healthcare system. Black people make up 13.3% of the U.S. population, but 19% of Medicaid enrollees, and we'd be dealt a painful blow by this mean-spirited legislation. So those are just some of the highlights. I did read that whole paragraph because I thought the language was so interesting there. Mm-hmm. So the CBC has said, thanks but no thanks. We have better things to do with our time than to be propped up. And so you can put your arm around us and say, I have Black friends.
Right. And again, just like we see with Trump and Native communities, he's ignoring this entire group of people. He's ignoring this group's needs, the people that they represent, their needs, their actual material concerns. He's ignoring them.
Maybe he should stop paying so much attention to Mia Brzezinski and Joe Scarborough and start tweeting about things that matter.
Boy, I don't know what I'll do if we ever see that day.
It'd be a brilliant day.
Let's take a time out for a media minute.
I watched OJ Made in America a year ago, and I cannot stop thinking about it. I had no interest in seeing it. This often happens with me in sports-related shows, though I am so glad people convinced me that Friday Night Lights was more than a football show. However, I heard review after review talking about the show's critical excellence. That is, OJ Made in America. And I was about to spend a total of 48 hours on an airplane traveling to Sri Lanka, so I figured I will put OJ Made in America on my iPad and see if it would take up some of my time. I'm telling you all this because I want to convince you that I was the last person who might have decided to watch this documentary, and now I am the first person to implore you to watch it. OJ Made in America's most important work is done when it slowly unpacks the intersectional nature of the murders in the trial. I thought I knew a lot about race relations in America, but after watching the doc, I realized I didn't. That as a young woman, I was steeped in the story of OJ. I remember watching the Bronco chase, and I still know where I was when the verdict was announced, without contextualizing any of it. The headline for the doc on Amazon is, quote, "It is the defining cultural tale of modern America." I gotta tell you, I agree. I know it sounds like a commitment to watch this 8-hour documentary, but at this point, I think it should be required viewing for all Americans.
Let's end today's podcast with some activist actions.
It's not enough to say that Black Lives Matter. We have a responsibility to educate ourselves. Today's activist actions involve three simple actions you can take this week. Watch, listen, and read Black voices. Watch the film Get Out, one of the most disturbing, most uncomfortable, and most memorable films I've ever seen. The relevance of this film by director Jordan Peele that tackles our racist white society so bluntly makes it an essential watch for 2017. Roger Ebert's review says, "Get Out feels fresh and sharp in a way that studio horror movies almost never do. It is both unsettling and hysterical, often in the same moment, and it is totally unafraid to call people on their racist bullshit." End quote. Don't wait. Watch Get Out this week. Listen to Nina Simone. She's a singer, musician, and she was a civil rights activist who is no longer with us, but her music lives on. She's known for her civil rights songs, like Strange Fruit, Four Women, and this song, her response to the 1963 murder of Medgar Evers in Jackson, Mississippi, and the white supremacist terrorist bombing of the Baptist Church in Birmingham, Alabama. Mississippi, goddamn.
Picket lines, school boycotts, they try to say it's a communist plot. All I want is equality for my sister, my brother, my people, and me. Yes, you lied to me all these years. You told me to wash and clean my ears and talk real fine just like a lady, and you'd stop calling me Sister Sadie.
Simone is also known for standards that used to have meaning but are now used by ad agencies to sell products.
And I'm feeling good. Fish in the sea, you know how I feel. River running free, you know how I feel. Blossom on the tree, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life for me. And I'm feeling.
I recommend downloading one entire Nina Simone album and listening to it start to finish. You'll hear her emotion, her humor, her anger, and her soul. Read the Crunk Feminist Collective blog. The tagline is where crunk meets conscious and feminism meets cool. This is from their mission statement, combining terms like crunk and feminism and the cultural, gendered, and racial histories signified in each is a percussive moment, one that signals the kind of productive dissonance that occurs as we work at the edges of disciplines, on the margins of social life, and in the vexed spaces between academic and non-academic communities, end quote. Some recent blog posts up right now include How to Survive the Next 4 Years, Ben Carson's Shame, Atlanta's Housing Problem, How to Help and Get Help, and an interview with Deneen Milner, creator of My Brown Baby Black Parenting website and the author of the children's book Early Sunday Morning. Reading the smart, sometimes funny, and always bold writings of the Crunk Feminist Collective always helps me learn something new about women, about scholarship, about black lives, and about being unapologetically honest. You can do this. Watch, listen, read, and learn. Because black voices matter.
Thanks for spending time with us inside 254. You can find us a lot of places online. You can follow us on Facebook at Inside 254 Podcast. You can find us on Twitter at Inside 254 Pod. Instagram, we're at Inside 254. And we're online, where we put links and more information from each episode at inside254site.wordpress.com. You can follow us on Podbean, and please rate us on iTunes. Thanks for spending time with us this episode of Inside 254.